primary mental health services are provided through our client services program, so the casework and counselling program particularly, but we also have a health service, and that's primarily designed for people who don't have access to Medicare. So we are one of the very few services that are able to provide support for their health. And through providing support for health, we're also providing mental health support, because a number of our clients, in fact, the majority of our clients are often coming seeking support for things like anxiety and depression, which is obviously linked to their health. And that's something we work very closely with the health team on as well.
Are you able to share any experiences of yours?
Absolutely. You know, we've seen a real change over the years. And look, it's been pretty dire for people seeking asylum for a number of years now. But the policies, when government policies become more punitive and more restrictive, we see the very direct impact almost immediately with the clients that we work with. And I personally have seen that even in a few months, just how much harder it's become. And so what happens is when the process becomes harder, so there's been quite a bit of commentary about this new deadline that Peter Dutton's imposed, you know, increasing this urgency and stress on people who are seeking asylum, who've, you know, haven't been allowed to apply for many, many years. And then they were told they could apply and they were given a period of time in which they could apply, and they need legal support to be able to apply. And so there's, you know, legal services like ours and a handful in the community that are able to provide support to these clients. There's a limited service there as well, and we're trying as much as we can to help as many people as we can, and there's thousands of people who are in this process. You know, that change just, you know, puts the whole system in crisis, and our clients become more and more stressed out. And if we think about, you know, our clients have gone through, you know, such incredible experiences. They're some of the strongest and most resilient people you'll ever meet, but they've been through torture and war and trauma, and then even the experience of seeking asylum, the journeys across countries, no matter how they arrived, are traumatic experiences. Then they come into the community here and we make them wait years and years before they can even apply. And then we change their deadlines. We change the rules arbitrarily.
Have you ever found that asylum seekers are ever reluctant to seek help for their mental health? And if so, why that may be?
Well, I think, you know, mental health is one of the issues that I think all populations and all countries to grapple with in terms of reducing the stigma, making it sort of more okay to talk about, to recognise what's happening. And there have been big public health campaigns, for example, in Australia over the last few years, recognising that there's a really big problem in terms of people not recognising what's happening in terms of their mental health and then being afraid to ask for help or not knowing where to go for help. If you think about that applies to most everyone in the world, then you apply the other layers of disadvantage that people seeking asylum face. For example, if they don't have access to Medicare, they don't have access to income, they are not given much settlement support, if any at all. So how do you know what services are there and when to go for help and how to go for help? The service system that you might have been used to in a different country that you were in is vastly different to the one, for example, that you come to in Australia. You know, most people need help with just being able to navigate the system, even if you've lived all your life in Australia. So just imagine how much harder that is when you're learning and settling into a whole new system and you've got mental health issues that are starting to bubble away.
In regards to the lack of Medicare and or the difficulties in obtaining those kinds of services, does the Resource Centre alleviate any of these stresses?
Oh, well, we try to, and that's where the ASRC was born, and there are a number of services in the community sort of across Australia that are trying to do everything they can to support these communities. So providing things like food, we have a food bank, community meals, where people can come and get a hot meal here, material aid, the client services that I outlined, plus legal education, employment support, social and recreational support. They're the kinds of services that we try to provide and try and alleviate both the material deprivation and destitution that a lot of the people that we work with face, but also in terms of connecting them up with others and trying to, where possible, reintroduce a bit of hope, which is really difficult when you're facing this daunting journey ahead.
With reforms being suggested to Parliament this week surrounding certain citizenship and application processes, including the tougher English language testing and Peter Dutton's attempts to fill the seats as, I think, one Greens member called it, judge, jury and jailer. Does history show effects that these imposing suggestions has?
I know from our own experience of, you know, we migrated to this country many years ago. It made a huge difference when, you know, politicians talked in a welcoming way and celebrated multiculturalism. You know, settlement can be a really difficult process. There's, you know, there's real ups and downs in the process. And, you know, it's made even harder when you feel like the community that you're entering doesn't want you there or treats you as the other. And, that's the real shame of everything that we're seeing that Dutton and co. are doing, is that they're making it more... it's less welcoming. So, you know, and that has a real impact on people's sense of belonging and ability to set up a whole new life. And then practically as well, we know that it just adds another layer of stress and strain. And, you know, I think from years gone by, we know that Australia's had some really successful settlement programs. We've had waves of migrants who've settled really successfully, who, you know, hadn't been put through these, you know, tests that they're starting to introduce and have done incredibly well. So, you know, you have to ask the question, what's the real reason they're doing it for?
And so with the $70 million compensatory settlement that was announced on Wednesday, I guess that seems to share some acknowledgement of the barbarity taking place on Manus Island, at least, you know, from the federal government. Can you share your thoughts on this decision and what the next few months will look like for those on Manus?
You know, it's such an important acknowledgement of the suffering that people are going through. And I know from our own work here at the ASRC and through client services, we work with a lot of people who've been in detention, both offshore and onshore detention, and we work with them in the aftermath of that. It's not just like an experience of you've been in detention and you release into the community and you can start again. Detention itself puts people through incredible pain. We know that after 3 months of detention, that 90% of people will have an ongoing mental health issue. So, you know, let's hope it's a step in a greater recognition that those camps have to close.
The ASRC is hosting a telethon this coming Tuesday on the 20th of June with an extensive list of notable names involved in answering the phones. Are you able to explain how far a donation can go towards assisting refugees?
Absolutely. You know, it doesn't take a lot to help out in a really significant way. No matter what you can spare, whether that's $5, $10, $50, $100, it will make such a big difference. We know it doesn't take a lot of money to hire a social worker just for a day, and the more people that combine to support us, the more people will be able to help with things like mental health support, legal support. So I just encourage everyone to really dig deep. We provide a housing support service that supports people to stay in their homes, and it's been highly successful, and we're in real need for those funds because we're finding more and more people through this fast track application process are cut off their income support. So we have a lot more people coming to us now daily needing help to prevent them from being homeless. And we've got families, you know, that we're seeing nearly daily around this. So anything you can spare and donate will make a huge difference to literally keeping people away from homelessness even.